celebrating women writers in Maine. Just what is it about our state that brings out the writer in its residents? On today's show, we'll learn about a group called Maine Women Write. It celebrates, promotes, and supports writers in Maine who are, not surprisingly, women. Begun last year as a simple book club, the group has discovered a wellspring of interest among writers, from established authors to would-be writers to just those who love to read. Does Maine provide a better writing environment than many other states? Join our conversation. With me in the studio are three authors: Liza Bakewell, co-founder of Maine Women Write; Deirdre Fulton, who's published a young adult novel and is a staff writer for the Portland Phoenix; and Shauna Milliken-Humphrey, local culture and food writer and author of a novel. Maine Women Write. This is Maine calling. Pretty intriguing questions posed by our host about our topic today. Welcome to our guests, first of all. And I'll open this to the whole group. Usually when a club forms or a new group forms, there's a reason for it, and it's an unmet need. And I'm wondering if you could just sort of address, what was the unmet need here?
Maybe I'll begin. This is Liza Bakewell, and I'm one of the co-founders of Maine Women Write with two other women, Caitlin Shetterly, another author, and photographer Lisa Bowe. And we started actually quite differently than how we have ended up. We were having a brainstorming session at a coffee shop in Portland about how to market a book. And what we discovered while we were talking, that we actually were in a group, hadn't been formed yet, of five other authors. There were seven altogether who had published their first book with a major press in 2011. This was way back in February of 2011. And this became, this grew immediately into an idea of forming a statewide book club with these seven authors. They had landed in our lap. And that's how the group began. We had a launch in September at Space Gallery. And what we discovered, we had prayed the night before that 20 people would come. In fact, we had invited 20 family members to make sure we would achieve that goal. But 125 people came. And we scrambled to set up chairs and so forth to introduce these seven authors and to launch the statewide book club. And in fact, this group of women were telling us that this idea was even larger than we had initially imagined, that there was a community of women writers out there and women readers and men readers as well of women's books and articles that did lack a central office. And we have found ourselves as the becoming the central office of this enormous statewide community of writers and readers.
Yeah, were any of you surprised by that reaction? You said you had hoped for at least a small audience. To what do you attribute that sort of big reaction?
I can take that one. This is Shauna. And I think that people in Maine especially want to be authors or those who are writing in their home offices. I think they're just so hungry for community. It's as if there's this whole group of people, women especially, but they're kind of on the outside looking in. They're maybe up on tippy-toe looking over a fence, just wanting to be part of something, wanting to be part of that community. And I'm just so thankful that Liza and Lisa and Caitlin got together and brought that for us, and it was a wonderful event. I'm 125 people. It was terrific.
Some writers, I recall, prefer solitude and might come to Maine to sort of to be alone and to write their stories. But here, there's sort of a demand for a sense of community.
I think so. I think, of course, writers are alone often. It's hard to write while you're cooking dinner for your kids. But at the same time, because you're alone so much, there is a need to balance that out with a sense of community. And the book clubs have been very successful because lots of wannabe writers, lots of engaged writers have joined these book clubs. We've discovered they want to talk about the content of the book as much as they want to talk about how on earth did you ever write that book while you were holding down a job and getting your kids off to school and so forth. And I think women, of course, in history have been writing letters and diaries for years and years and years, centuries. But now, of course, there's this explosion of published women authors, and it's become a goal for a lot of people, but not everyone. But I think the community of writers recognize both this long tradition of writing among women, often very personal things. Keeping diaries and letters tend to be personal documents meant to be unpublished, actually. And yet, people's stories and people want to tell their stories to one another. And I think both the statewide book club has come to realize this, and hopefully some future programming as well. But I think that's what brought all those people out that evening, and they were telling us something.
Deirdre Fulton, you write during the day for the Phoenix, and then what do you do, go home at night and write more, only it's fiction?
Yes. So during the day, I write as Deirdre Fulton for the Phoenix, and then my books are actually published under a pen name, Elizabeth Miles. That's the Fury series, which is a young adult trilogy. And, yeah, I try to structure my time so that I'm spending, a few hours, a few days a week writing fiction and balancing that with my day job. But it was remarkable that night at Space how many people had questions about the logistical specifics of how we get things done, how we write, how we draft, how we outline, how we edit. And I think that that really spoke to, the nascent infrastructure that exists. People in Maine are really excited about reading and writing and really excited to support successful members of their community.
I anticipate that we'll get calls from aspiring writers who will want some tips on how to do this, and we'll do that, and we'll talk about some of your individual works as well. But I want to talk about Maine as a sort of a place to write. If you look in my office and get over the initial shock, you'll see that it's really a pile of books. It looks like a book swap, and those are Maine authors, and those are that seems to be a trend that's happened in the past, 5 or 8 years. It seems like there are a lot more writers writing in Maine. Why is that?
Well, I can talk about that a little bit. When I was at Maine Writers and Publishers Alliance, the statistic that I often cited was that Maine had more writers per capita than any other state. And
it used to be restaurants, but now it's
or churches. but I think that Maine lends itself to that kind of those kind of extremes that attract the writing personality, whether that's weather extremes or cultural extremes or just any sort of extreme. You can be as remote as you want or as socialized as you want, and I think that tends to attract the writing personality.
Is it harder to write, if you were in a desert? It's always dry. It's always, 86, and it's always sunny. Do you need changes in, it sounds silly, but changes in weather and atmosphere to inspire you sometimes?
I definitely think that, for me, even I'm a non-native Mainer, but I definitely think that for me, the natural environment served as an inspiration and almost a character in itself in my books. And I definitely know that that's true for Shauna as well. I think that having such majesty and extremes as she said, it really serves to heighten the tension in your prose, and it gives you such interesting settings to work with.
As we said, we'll probably get some calls from aspiring writers. And so I wondered if you were assigned, say, you were taking a class and the assignment was to go out and write a novel, how would you start?
Well, the first thing you would do as a parent, you'd get childcare. And then you'd go through the online rentals and see if there's a cabin out there so you can get away from your house.
I would disagree with that, Liza. I think that if you're going to take yourself seriously as a novelist, and I absolutely appreciate what you're saying, but I think that for me, it has to be part of my daily life. And there's this phrase, I think it's called inspiration is for amateurs. And that's kind of harsh, but I look at it as my job. So if someone were to assign me the task of writing a novel and they were going to pay me for it, then I would look at that as, you know, my job. And the first thing I would want would be a schedule and a deliverable date, something like that. So it's not very romantic, my approach, at all. I like Liza's better, so I'm sorry. Continue, yeah. Please, Liza.
But, so distraction management aside, do you begin with weaving a plot? Do you develop some characters?
I mean, I think that every author is different. I know that I work off of a very detailed outline that works, you know, chapter by chapter. I know where every chapter is going to begin and where it's going to end. I know where the book is going to begin and I know where the book is going to end before I even start writing. And I think that that makes, you know, lots of people ask about the question of writer's block. And when you're working off of such a detailed outline, it's easier to work through writer's block because you can just skip ahead. If one section isn't working for you, you can move on to the next one. So that's my personal approach. I'm not sure about you guys.
Well, I'll just talk about the opposite approach, as it's unfortunately I wish and never learned how to write an outline. And I just write, and the whole thing is a mess. And I have to cut it up physically and put it on the floor and move it around. And when I heard Sarah Bronstein, who's one of our 7 authors this year, talk about the way she organized her chapters of The Sweet Relief of Missing Children, it was very similar to mine.
She uses index cards, right?
Yes, yeah. I think so.
Yeah, and she puts them down on the floor and kind of puts them into an order that makes logical sense, but by physically moving these chapters on index cards around. So I think you can go either way with the outline or the complete no outline, but hope it all comes together later.
Mine is a hybrid. Mine starts with the characters, and I write the characters, and then at some point, a plot develops from that. Sometimes the plot is stronger than others, but mine are character-driven pieces.
Join the conversation, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Tweet at Maine Calling, email talk@mpbn.net. We're talking about writing today and Maine women write. Let's talk a little bit about your book. Sorry, something happening behind me. A little bit about your books. As you mentioned, Deirdre, you're writing a. Are you finished? Is it a trilogy?
It's a trilogy. The first book came out last year. The second book comes out this September, and the third one will come out next year.
And this we would call in the business YA,
which stands for young adult. Yeah. And so it's geared toward teenagers, 14 and up. But you know, as we all know, the YA industry is booming, and it's definitely a genre that's enjoyed both by teenagers and adults.
And is this a paranormal sort of genre?
Yes. Yeah. It has paranormal elements. In a nutshell, it's the story of what would happen if the Furies, who were the mythological goddesses of revenge, showed up in a small town in Maine and wreaked havoc and punished teenagers for doing bad things.
This genre has sort of, very popular. There are opportunities, though, to introduce to these readers larger themes about real life, about the challenges of life, other big questions that you can fit in there.
Definitely.
In the course of them being entertained. Is that kind of what's happening?
Yeah, I mean, there are issues of bullying and of, you know, young romantic tensions, and there are some class issues in my book. I mean, those aren't the overriding themes, but it definitely gives you the opportunity to touch on some of those. And there are certainly young adult books out there that delve into those harder topics in a much more rigorous way than mine does.
Shauna, your novel, Show Me Good Land, can you talk about that quickly?
Sure. It's a story of 4 people whose lives are loosely connected by one very brutal murder in Aroostook County, and it paints a picture of a different kind of Maine, Maine that isn't picture postcards and vacation land. It's a little bit more real, and a lot of people have likened it to the Beans of Egypt, Maine. It forces the reader to engage and ask themselves where their individual moral lines are drawn. So, you know, for instance, is one abortion okay? Is two, is underage relationships, are they ever okay? What about violence? So,
I'm curious about why you chose Aroostook County.
Oh, I'm from Aroostook County. I'm from Holton.
Write what you know, right?
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. I'm as Maine as it gets.
Yeah. Liza, you also are you're a anthropologist as well. So do you blend your academic profession with your writing?
I'd like to say I try to get rid of my academic profession while I do my writing, because in academia we have very stylized forms of writing, and it's not as creative as it could be if you could shed some of those. But yes, in fact, I guess I can't take the anthropologist out of me. It's too deeply seated. I've been involved for 30 years. But I try to write to a large audience because my specialty within anthropology is linguistics, language. And that tends to, ironically, be completely unavailable to your average reader out there. Limited to just a few colleagues within my department. And I made an effort with my book on madre, which is on the word mother in Spanish, to reach out to, and as it turns out, we all use language. We don't think about it much. It's like walking. Writers, of course, are attentive to it. But everyone is interested in exactly how language is connected to our culture, society, emotions, and so forth. And that's what I hope to achieve in the book.
Join the conversation, 1-800-399-3566. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, your comments and questions, email talk@mpbn.net, tweet @MaineCalling, post a comment on our Facebook page, or the number again, 1-800-399-3566. Back in a moment.
On the next Fresh Air, Paul McCartney talks with us from his home studio in England.
I happen to have a piano beside me here. It's like, besame, besame mucho.
And we hear recordings from his new collection of songs from his father's generation. Join us.
Join us this evening for Fresh Air at 7 o'clock.
Loudon Wainwright III has a new CD called Older Than My Old Man Now. I'm Sarah Willis, tonight on In Tune by 10. New music from Loudon Wainwright III and more here on MPBN Radio.
Older than my old man now. He died at 63, that's way too young. Now you gotta feed me, now you gotta need me.
Broadcast of Maine Calling is made possible by MPBN listener contributions and by SCORE, now seeking volunteers with business experience to mentor small business owners at locations throughout Maine. SCOREMaine.org.
I don't remember a time when I had a peaceful mind, but then it never occurred to me that I should. I did work and drank and read until my eyes.
Welcome back to the program. I'm going right to Shauna. Shauna, can you identify that music that we were just playing?
That would be one Travis James Humphrey, who I happen to be married to. Thank you.
That was actually music that was I found on your book trailer, I believe,
yes.
on your site. So anyway, very, very cool. You have another artist in the family as well.
Some days are better than others, but I was very fortunate to have someone write a song about the book and record it for me as part of the book trailer.
This is Maine Calling. I'm Keith Shortall. Today we're speaking with Liza Bakewell, author and co-founder of Maine Women Write. Her most recent book is Madre, Perilous Journeys with a Spanish Noun. Deirdre Fulton, author of Fury, written under the pen name Elizabeth Miles. And she is also a staff writer at the Portland Phoenix. And Shauna Milliken Humphrey, local culture and food writer, author of Show Me Good Land. Join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Talk email, talk@mpbn.net, tweet @MaineCalling, or post to our Facebook page. And we've got some patient callers waiting to join the conversation. Let's go to Cape Elizabeth and Margaret. Hi, Margaret. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call. So I am a little off track of what you guys are writing, but I run drama programs for elementary kids, And I've had difficulty finding engaging plays that are not just remakes of Snow White, etc., with the number of characters and the length I need. So I have been turning contemporary stories into plays, and I would really love to just be using my creative energy to write them myself. I think I'm quite capable of it, but I don't have any instruction in this. So I was just wondering whether there are other people in your network who are doing this kind of thing, or whether there are online sources or anything else you might suggest.
I can take that one. This is Shauna. And if you haven't already, I would really encourage you to get involved with a couple of organizations. The first one is called Maine Writers and Publishers Alliance. That's a 35-year-old organization.
I noted that when you mentioned it earlier.
Yeah. The folks there, they can put you in touch with a community, or at least I hope that they can. Another good source, it's out of Boston. It's called Grub Street. G-R-U-B. And if you do a Google search, that should come up. They offer online classes, and again, they work to build a community of writers. And then also check out Media Bistro. That's more professional writing, more journalism, but sometimes there are some online classes that that can be of use, and that's a way to connect as well.
Terrific.
The great thing about Grub Street, too, is that they have weekend workshops and stuff like that, and being in Boston, it's close enough that, you know, perhaps you could pop down. So,
yep, that's what I would need.
Thank you for doing what you do, though. I think what you're doing is really important.
Yeah, it's
so
very exciting. Yeah.
Margaret, you said at the outset that you wanted to do this, but you were sort of looking for some help. Is it intimidating to start this process? Is that,
you know, I think that it's the blank page syndrome. You know, I think that when I get going with this kind of thing, I do get going. But I think the aloneness factor for what I'm doing is a little bit larger because there are fewer people still doing what I'm doing than what you're doing, you know, well, than what the authors on the show are doing.
Yeah. Well, thanks for joining the program today.
Thank you very much.
1-800-399-3566. My impression of many writers is, and you see this sometimes, that they're driven to write. They can't help it. They can't stop. It's all they do. If they couldn't write, they don't know what they would do. But I'm hearing and gathering that there are writers who are sort of reluctant to start or having difficulty starting. Is there a spectrum of sort of personalities involved in the writing world?
Well, I think any one of us could probably field that one, but I think that there's often a mental block or something that happens, and people don't distinguish the difference between writing and publishing. Those two things are very, very different. And anyone who writes, whether, as Liza was talking about earlier, whether it's a journal or a letter or a blog, you're a writer, and that's a writer with a capital W. Now, publishing is the business end of things, and that's a completely different process. But I think that too often people marry the two, and that gets fixed in their mind as a big block. And if they haven't published or haven't widely published, then they're very reluctant to call themselves a writer.
Very scary, too, I think, for people. One of the questions that I get a lot, especially from younger students when I visit schools, is, you know, I have all of these ideas, but I can't get further than, you know, I write a couple of chapters and then I lose interest, or then I don't know what to do next. And I think that it's really hard to maintain a momentum. You know, once you get past the initial excitement of how cool it is to put words down on paper, I think finding something beyond that to motivate yourself is often a challenge.
Yeah, go ahead.
There are many books on how to get going, how to be inspired. Annie Lamott's Bird by Bird is quite famous, but Stephen King wrote a very good book on writing right here in Maine. There's an unlimited number of these books, and of course, on the internet as well. And I think it's because so many people, even the top-notch people, will sit and not know how to move forward with a certain plot or a paragraph, or it's not limited to the beginner.
I you know, I've read that there's really only, you know, one story, and it, you know, that there's only one movie, only one book, and there's a hero and or heroine, and
they encounter a crisis, and then they solve the crisis, and there's a climax, and maybe there's an enemy, and then it ends happily. And if you want to do a tragedy, you just reverse it. Is that a cynical view of storytelling, or is there some truth to it?
Absolutely, it's true. And this is, again, there's sort of a disconnect that happens. And the difference between a really good story idea and a really well-crafted piece of writing. The two things are entirely separate. And in the history of the world, there has never been a shortage of good story ideas. And they all, I think, essentially boil down to what you're talking about, what you're describing, Keith. But the real challenge, and I think the grace happens, is when you have the talent and the dedication and the instruction to put that into a well-crafted story.
And to convince the reader that your characters are real, even if they're part of a fantasy, perhaps. Let's go to Portland and Barry. Hi, Barry. Welcome to the program.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my question. Hi, ladies.
Hi.
Hello.
I have a question because you are main writers. Some of you are writing fiction. Some of you are writing about your real lives. And I'd like if you could talk a little bit about how you incorporate characters who are actually real in your lives, and how do you incorporate them with concerns for both respect for them as well as liability, and particularly if you're writing about characters who may have flaws or problems or not be just a flattering perspective.
Gosh, I wish Melissa was here. Melissa Coleman, who's another member of our group, can speak really eloquently to this, But I mean, for me, I think that it's the most important thing to have. One of my biggest challenges is to craft realistic dialogue. And once I find that, I find that I am being the most honest to my characters. But I'm interested to hear what you guys have to say.
Well, I can field this one a little bit. And I think it's just important, whether you're writing fiction or nonfiction, to have respect for the people that you're writing about, because they're not asking to be written about. I wrote a short piece about my grandmother for a magazine, and I thought it was a very benign, very loving sort of piece. But one cousin, you know, completely was offended by it. And that's a relationship that is going to last longer than the issue date of any magazine. So if you are writing about your family, just be careful and be compassionate and recognize that they're not asking to be written about. So,
yeah, Barry, are you in the process of writing now?
I am working on a novel.
Can you share a little bit?
It's always hard,
it's
isn't
about
it?
It's about a really current problem in our culture that's sort of increasingly cropped up, and it's very controversial. And I am incorporating an experience with people who have gone through this. And it's really important that the story be told. And I have fictionalized the characters, but I want to be really careful that I'm also protecting them.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I think that Anne Lamott had some wonderful advice about disguising characters. And I don't know if it's a word that I can use on the air, but what she said is that if it's a male character, just give a particular part of his anatomy, you know, make that very, very small. and just describe it, you know, in such a way that it's very small and very tiny, and then that way they'll never think that it's them. So I suppose if there's a male character, you could do that. But otherwise, I think I would just, I think I would just write down the story and see what happens at first. You know, write it down the way that you want to tell it, and then once it's there on paper, you can decide or have a family member read it and decide and just say what might be hitting too close to home, what might need to be rewritten, what might need to be told in a different way.
I think that's one reason why it's really important to have some sort of critique group or trusted group of readers, even if it's not a formalized editing group, to run those sorts of things by people. I think that you can get so bogged down in your own doubts and questions about it that it helps a lot of times to have, you know, to have some sort of neutral party read it and offer their thoughts, as long as you trust them and are willing to take their constructive criticisms as well.
Okay, Barry, we'll look for the book.
Please do.
All right.
My curiosity is
piqued.
You will
know it when it arrives. We'll know it. So much.
Yeah, okay. Thanks very much. Let's take a quick call from Westbrook and Jim. Hi, Jim. Go ahead.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call. And I just want to lead with, I am not a Maine writer. I'm a Maine resident. But my mother is a Maine writer. And she actually has a couple manuscripts that they're actually sitting on my office desk. She's got a couple manuscripts that she wrote maybe 15, 20 years ago and never sought publication. And now there's this land of self-publication where one doesn't necessarily need to go through the traditional sort of channels. And I, you know, I think she would feel really good if she even sold one Kindle version of her book or something like that. And I don't know how to approach that. I think it's a great idea, but I don't know. And if you don't mind, I'll listen to your reply off the air.
Sure, Shauna.
Sure, I can field this one. This was a very popular question when I was at Maine Writers and Publishers Alliance, and the good thing about self-publishing is that you have 100% control of the product. That's also the bad thing about self-publishing. So I would urge you, before you make that investment, I would just urge you to consider what your motives are for putting this book out there. If it's to have a commemorative piece for your mom, if it's to, you know, finally see the story in book form, if it's, you know, if for any sort of emotional or sentimental reason, then self-publishing can make a lot of sense. If you, you know, for instance, owned a series of candy stores and you'd written a book about the history of candy in Maine and you had a way to sell that book and distribute it, self-publishing could also make a lot of sense. If you are looking to compete with large publishers in the mass market, then it's probably going to disappoint you. So that's my advice. It's really important to understand the distribution process, and in 15 seconds, that means that most bookstores don't call up individual publishers to order copies of their book. They call one or two major distributors. And right now, those distributors, they don't carry self-published titles because they can't make any money from them in volume. So if you can't get a distributor, you act as that distributor.
1-800-399-3566. We're going to take another short break. When we return, more of your comments and questions. Please stay with us.
I'm Tom Asbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, sizing up Ben Bernanke. The economy's getting traction. How's the Fed chief done? How's he doing? That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
Join us for On Point this evening at midnight. And join us immediately following Maine Calling at 1 o'clock for the Commonwealth Club of California. The guest today is Dan Akerson, Chairman and CEO of General Motors. A conversation about the future of personal mobility with the chief of America's largest car maker, the state of the American auto industry, the future of the Chevy Volt, and the complicated relationship for both customers and as a competitor with China. That's the Commonwealth Club of California immediately following Maine Calling at 1 o'clock this afternoon.
And welcome back. I'm Keith Shortall. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, Maine Women Write. Join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. Email talk@mpbn.net. Post to our Facebook page or tweet at Maine Calling. Our guest, Liza Bakewell, author and co-founder of Maine Women Write, Deirdre Fulton, author and staff writer at the Portland Phoenix, and Shauna Milliken-Humphrey, author and local culture and food writer. We have an email from a listener in Freeport who writes, "Thank you for having these fine writers on to talk about their craft. I'm interested in hearing about how they work to diversify their community by reaching out to women of color and to women who may be economically challenged in these trying times."
That is a fantastic question and is at the very forefront of our minds. Lisa Bowe, and I say our, Lisa Bowe and I, who are now co-directing Maine Women Write, the organization, and thinking about next year's selection of books for the book club, as well as adding new programming to our second year. And we would love suggestions. We were going to reach out. We will reach out to our community of Facebook fans with a survey that will be coming up in the next couple of months, short survey, asking our community to give us suggestions, a wish list, and so forth. This particular issue, however, is right up there, along with another genre that tends to be left out as well, and that's poetry. So please, whoever you are from Freeport, I'm from Freeport, call me. Send us, post something on Facebook, email us. We're very open to that, and we would love to include that topic or area in our future programming.
Let's go to Cornville and Bonnie. Hi, Bonnie. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much for taking my call. Actually, it's really interesting you just mentioned poetry because that's what I'm interested in. And in the past, I've written some myth-type stories, which are for all ages, but are primarily for children. And then this evolved into a book called The Animal Riddle Book, which I wrote and illustrated because I'm an artist as well. I don't know if I said that. And I'm really trying to find a publisher. So I have a couple of questions. One, is your group open to new people? That's the first question. Is there a membership fee? And do you act as mentors to people who, to writers who need some direction? Because I know from experience that the publishing world has changed so much, not just going online, but publishers are now owned by things like drug companies, and it's just changed totally. So it's very, very hard to get your work out there. So that's my big question. I really want to get my work out there.
Okay, let's get our guests to answer those questions. Are you accepting new members?
Thank you.
Why don't I begin that, Liza, here? We don't have a formal membership. That may be something we have in the future. We have a Facebook page. You can friend us, and once you do, you can post on the page. You can read other posts. Please do so because we will be reaching out to our Facebook community. We have over 400 people now on it. We will be reaching out to them, as I mentioned a minute ago, to survey the women there and men, for that matter, and asking them questions about what's on their wish list for this community. How can we better serve this community? You would be a member of the community, and your concerns are very familiar to many members of our community. So we don't have a formal membership, but please join our Facebook, and that will begin the process of you being part of our community. I'm going to hand it over to Shauna to help answer some of the publication questions specifically.
Sure. The first thing that I would suggest that you do, and it's always sounds a little bit counterintuitive, but it's to stop writing and to start reading and really identify who are your competing titles. Mm-hmm. It sounds like the book that you've written is a little bit distinct. And while that can be a good thing, that can also be a hard sell or a hard thing to sell. Mm-hmm. So the best thing that I would advise you to do is really read what else is out there that is in any way like what you've written. And if you keep coming back to the same refrain that says, you know, oh, there's absolutely nothing else out there like that, then just consider that there's probably a reason for that. So really just try to find any links that you can. Go to the bookstores, go to your local independent bookstores, actually pick up copies of those books, flip to the back. 9 times out of 10 in the acknowledgement section, that author will credit a literary agent or an editor. And once you start compiling this list of titles that are similar to yours, I think you're going to have a lot more success in marketing it and finding a publisher.
Bonnie, good luck.
Okay, may I just add one other thing?
Sure, go ahead.
Very quickly.
Yeah.
For those of you who are interested, there is a Book Bazaar artist book at the University of Southern Maine on Sunday, April 1st. And I think that you're... all of you there and those of you listening would really enjoy going to this.
Okay.
To discover what artist books are.
All right. Thanks, Bonnie.
Is that part of the main festival of the
yes.
book?
Yes,
okay.
It is.
Great.
Right. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Bonnie.
Okay. Bye.
And bye-bye. 1-800-399-3566. We have a tweet asking, are there a certain number of words that each of you write per day? Do you have a quota for yourself or do you go until it's done?
I personally don't. This is Deirdre / Elizabeth speaking. But I do know lots of people who do, who shoot for 1,000 or 1,500 words a day. I don't know. Do either of you?
I don't either. This is Liza speaking. I just try to make myself sit down for 3 hours and write. And I'm happy if I get the perfect sentence.
Let's go to Luke, who is driving. Hi, Luke. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
I was just wondering kind of about the physical kind of minutia. Like, where do you write, like, the size of your desk on a computer? Is it really clean? Is it messy? Any of those details I think would be real interesting. I don't know, just to kind of imagine what's, like, a good, healthy space to produce words in.
Are you stalking us?
I'm guessing that's a very individual thing, isn't it? People like different settings, right?
Mm. Yeah. I think so.
On my coffee table, someone gave me, when we first moved into our old farmhouse 11 years ago, someone gave me a book on writers' offices. They're photographs of writers' offices or writers' rooms. And I love it. Each one is totally different. It's a coffee table book. For me, I avoid my office. It has my bills. It's all sorts of things all over the floor. It's just a bad place for me to write. So I've taken over now a bedroom that used to be the sewing room. And I go up there and there's nothing up there but me.
Few minutes left. Let's take a few more calls. Zach is calling from Saco. Hi, Zach.
Hello. Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm not a writer per se, but I am a college student, so I find myself writing often and speaking in class. And my question was more geared towards Liza, who had mentioned earlier about her linguistic anthropology and the use of words and the way that you have to come over a verbal hump sometimes with people to get them to understand you. I just didn't know if you could comment on that, if you've any experience with that or any knowledge.
Really quick, Liza.
Well, really quick. I mean, of course, that's within psychology and linguistics and psychological linguistics and so forth. But I can say my book of 50,000 words was about one word and how to understand it.
Let's talk quickly about Festival of the Book. Are you all going to be involved in some way or anyone?
As Elizabeth, I'm sitting on two different panels, one with two other Maine YA authors, Sarah Thompson, who wrote Mercy, and Amelie Howard, who wrote Blood Spell. And we'll be talking about real-life themes in supernatural YA fiction. And then I'll also be speaking with Alma Katsu, who wrote The Taker, which is another Simon & Schuster book. And we'll be talking also about supernatural themes and gothic fiction. And both of those events are happening on Saturday.
I participated last year. It was wonderful, and I'm so excited that this year all I have to do is be in the audience.
I'm sitting this year out as well, but I encourage everyone to go. It's a wonderful event. It just gets better every year.
And we have links to all of your sites on our Facebook page at Maine Calling. Check that out. Liza, Deirdre, Shauna, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
Liza Bakewell, author and co-founder of Maine Women Write, her most recent book, Madre, Perilous Journeys with a Spanish Noun. Deirdre Fulton, author of Fury, written under the pen name Elizabeth Miles. She's a staff writer at the Portland Phoenix. And Shauna Milliken-Humphrey, local culture and food writer, author of Show Me Good Land. Today's program produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Our volunteer Scott McAuliffe answered your calls. Lindsay Maynard ran the board. We had additional help from the MPBN web team. You can listen to this conversation and previous editions of the show by visiting mpbn.net. I'm Keith Shortall. You've been listening to Maine Calling on the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.